You will not be able to stay home, my brother. You will not be able to log in, upload, or discover. Or refresh, reverse the state, that's the promise. You will not be able to hate the inside from those that really want you to be great in this world. Cause the revolution will not be televised. You will not be able to fake the funk on a nasty dump to be placed amongst the crates you won't. The revolution will not be raising bumps from job interviews 5 days this week just so you can stand on your feet and make ends meet. The revolution will play for keeps. The revolution will not end in the streets where it began, but it will sweep through the chocolate woods and corporate hoods and suburbia until it understands. That's
the revolution will not be televised.
The revolution will not be televised. You will not be able to gloat about cash and your voter hope on this rich agenda, this slick pretender whose only mission is to leave you broke. The revolution will not wash away with soap. It will not sentence you differently because your skin tone represents a weed crack. The revolution will not end in the streets where it began, but it will go through the fucking arms and the court.
My apologies. I don't know.
You will not be able to make lemonade without lemonade.
Try to mess me up. Try to mess my mix up. Make sure y'all share this, family.
Just to breathe this foul air, whether in the gallows of Philly or Bel Air, it's clear that the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be ignoring dots, connecting Planned Parenthood with the Nazis. The revolution will not prescribe you oxys just to be down. That broadcast live from a marathon in Beantown. It won't make you blind and act if you can see now. The revolution will not be. It will not be. The revolution, the resolution, creative rebooting, master making, removing all the hate that had us losing. Bless up. The revolution will not be televised. 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 No, my brothers and sisters, it will be live.
So, peace and black power family. Wakusu, Sister Angel Proctor, peace and black power to you. Make sure you share this video, family. Make sure y'all share it because what we're trying to do, family, is we're trying to get out here and get this message to the masses. Y'all know how we do. You know what I'm saying? So make sure y'all share this broadcast. Welcome to Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Eric Tolbert. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones. Erica's on strike. Apparently, she says she is dealing with inhospitable working conditions, and she's outside right now protesting, you know, for a raise. Can't y'all hear? No Roger, no reverb, no rent. No Roger, no reverb, no rent. What's good, family? Make sure you run out and go to the site. Make sure you go to the link. Get your copy of the Independence Day Project, family. The Independence Day Project is the video that we've been trying to tell y'all. It's the one that's going to give you a vivid picture and a clear understanding of what Black revolutionary thought and process looks like. Also, it gives you a clear understanding of what it's like to, you know, to see an independent Black community, all right? We're going to be on some stuff tonight, y'all. We're going to talk about a few things, and hopefully it don't get too loud. I got the windows open, and you know how I get down here in North Philly. Lucky we don't hear the bikes out by now. You know what I'm saying? And share as I am sharing. I'm letting people on Instagram and all those other people places know that we're live. You know what I'm saying? We got to let the family know we're in the building because this topic tonight is going to be off the chain. I promise you. It's going to be off the chain, and definitely want y'all to take note of some of the things we talk about tonight, because we will be revealing the race card. And in talking about the race card, we're going to go into all of the specifics and the particulars. We're going to talk about the events that have recently occurred specifically. You know, we talked about Starbucks last week, but now we're going to talk about Waffle House. We're going to talk about the golf course. You know what I'm saying? What's going on, Sister Nikki? Peace and black power to you. Brother Chris. Wakusu family, wake up, clean up, stand up. Y'all know that's how we get there. That's our acronym, Wakusu. So let's get into it, family, as I try to share this. And hopefully you will all share this too. You know what I'm saying? And share it in your groups. Share with your family. This right here, you know, people used to pay to get like online education. In fact, if you go to certain sites right now, they have like what's called pay-per-view. But we're giving you all this game for free, family. We're giving you all this game for free. Letting y'all know how the system of white supremacy has been butt-fucking us for a long time. My apologies if y'all got children watching. I'll try to keep the language to, you know, a certain level of, certain level of respect. But it is what it is. So let me get into it real quick as we talk about the race card. And this is something that we need to understand as Black people, because this is something that, for those of you who continue to do this, to continue to have dialogue with people outside the community, and they typically trip Black people up by throwing terms out like race baiter, you're using the race card, you know what I'm saying? You're a liberal sympathizer, you're trying to appeal to white guilt and all that other bullshit. Basically, what they're doing is disarming you. And if you're not skilled in the art of debate, they will have you convinced that Black people are the problem, that your ineptitude is the problem, not that racism, white supremacy was used as a catapult to help launch them further or give them a head start in whatever race we're running in regards to the race to resources and things of that nature. So if you're in these conversations and they're using these terms against you or towards you, then family, you know, we have to be armed with dealing with that. Now, before I get into it, family, I want y'all to check in some things, you know what I'm saying? I want y'all to check out some things, because I want y'all to understand that this ain't just me. You know, you also know that I'm part of the Freedom Train Radio Network, and that they have the Freedom Train Radio Show. You know, we got my The Fix. That's also broadcast, the Sports Talk Radio Show, Brother Joe Ward. We have Lessons from the Screen, my brother Patrick Irvin. We have Tea Time with the sisters EB, you know, Mia, and we got my sister Tammy, or Tam IE, you know what I'm saying? And we got Mo, you know, because Mo knows the Oracle. We got my sister Mo on there. And these are all broadcast and podcasts throughout the week, as well as the office hours, which is also podcast on their network. In addition to that, you know, we have the National Black Liberation Front, which consistently holds down Sundays. So typically, my brother IJ Tayemba, who, by the way, turned 50 today. So peace and Black power, Wakusu to you, King. Enjoy your day. You know what I'm saying? I already see that they got I got the cake out of Harlem Liberation School. Send your brother a slice. You know what I'm saying? Put it in one of those airtight envelopes. I'll take a slice. You know what I mean? Peace and Black power. Uh-oh, I see we got Fort Wayne in the house. Okay, we got it. Peace and Black power. Brother Franklin, you know, Sister Lenore, Brother Mark McPhee, you know what I'm saying? Oh, snap. So we got some white folks surviving. Listen, we're going to talk all that. Sister Shah Dixon, peace and Black power to you, Sister Shah. Tea time. It's all on the Freedom Train Radio Network, and you can find it at freedomtrainradio.com. That's freedomtrainradio.com. Peace and Black power, Brother Darnell. Wakusu King. So, and by the way, also my brother Shaka Shakur comes on. So my brother Ajay comes on at 12 p.m. My brother Shaka Mukasa Shakur comes on at 2 p.m. giving you some really powerful information. Check out all of these different, you know, sites. And don't forget to go to blackindependence.org to get your copy of the Independence Day Project. Now, family, let's get into it. All right, shall we? Okay, so we're going to talk about the race card tonight, and very, very interesting conversation topical, because, you know, we've been dealing with all of these different instances of white supremacy lately, you know, all of these different outsets, and we've been, you know, I'm not going to get into the I told you so's this, any of that later on in the show, but for now, we're going to talk about, you know, the origins of the race card, because it's always thrown in the face of Black people whenever we hold white folk accountable for, you know, utilizing this system of white supremacy to protect white aggression and to preserve, you know, white privilege. We're always given this, you're just using the race card. It's their cop-out. But family, it's because white folk understand white supremacy, and they understand the privilege that's gained by white supremacy. They all understand it. So it's not even a class situation when it comes to us. The class struggle that they deal with, their class struggle is from within their particular community. It has nothing to do with us whatsoever. As what is that son of a bitch that Lyndon B. Johnson once said, if you can convince the lowest white person that they're better than the best Black person, then you have achieved in your job into creating division between the races. So Let's get into it. Let's get into it, family. So the origins of the race car. Now, we might think that it's a recent phenomenon, but actually, this is a term that has been coined since the 1850s. It was used sparingly, but it was used in comic strips. So it was used as to talk about the different political struggles, and it was talking about how, you know, some people were utilizing race to galvanize energy behind their movements. They basically were talking about the Republicans at the time. So they were using comic strips. And as I taught my class yesterday, we had a final, so the class is over, but I was teaching a class on art of film. And I was teaching them that all art is some form of propaganda. And that film has just been the most recent, and it has like a faster delivery system than the other forms of propaganda. So we're talking about comics. Comics was the original propaganda tools and technique used, because at the time in the 1850s, most people couldn't read. You know what I'm saying? Most people were reading and globally speaking, specifically people who were under the influence of Europeans. They were reading at like a second or third grade level. So you had to, when you put out news articles, you had to have political comics. You know, that was used later on. So it went on, and then the big debate was in 1863, when the Emancipation Proclamation was passed. They basically stated when Lincoln was talking about passing the Emancipation Proclamation, they basically stated that Lincoln was using the race card to give him the upper hand in the Civil War. That's what they were talking about, the race card, saying that he was utilizing black people to get this to hanging the carrot of freedom over blacks that were still enslaved in enslaved states. Because keep in mind, there were several states that didn't have slavery and that didn't apply, the Emancipation Proclamation didn't apply to. So that was in 1863. It was, you know, pretty much not used, but remember, you have to understand white supremacy. And this is why I keep telling y'all, share the broadcast. Y'all about to get an education tonight. I can't speak for anybody else, but, you know, I teach. You know what I'm saying? So in this particular process, you know, you found that the race card wasn't really used until the 80s. It came back into play in the 80s. And it was after the civil rights movement and all the so-called gangs from the civil rights community, when they pretty much killed the last resistance of the Black Power movement that started in the late 60s, early 70s, when you had black people engaged in armed combat in the streets with white supremacists, law officers and local cops and federal agencies. All right. They started using it again. There was the most recent beginnings was in 1989 in an Indiana newspaper called the Kokomo Tribune. Okay, Kokomo Tribune. All right, and that was in 1989. And they were talking about a black judge who had lost their seat, and they were claiming that the judge was using his racist, saying that was the reason why he wasn't elected, which was probably fucking true at the time. All right, but. So let's move forward. The modern day usage of the term race card was solidified with the acquittal of O.J. Simpson in the trial, when he was on trial for the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and that other dude, Weinstein, or whatever the hell his name was. That nobody cared about him. All anybody ever cared about, oh my God, he got away with killing Nicole. You know, I was like, cheers, Johnny Cochran. This bud's for you. But anyway, so just in case you don't think that I'm bringing any facts up, research Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter is a conservative, stork-looking white woman who went on record and said, in her book that was released in like 2012, that basically that the O.J. Simpson trial, that was the end of it. That white people said, fuck white guilt. We're not dealing with that anymore. And they said that from the O.J. Simpson trial on, white people took a declarative turn to no longer allow the guilt of white supremacy and racism to ride their backs as more people were still pushing for this thing called civil rights. All right? That's important because now the race card, as it was sold to us, has been, there's a lot of tricks and games that go with that. You know what I mean? So here's what we're really going to do. We're really going to get into what the real race card is. Because what I'm trying to show you is this whole idea of race card, it's a shell game. It was a shell game from day one. So it was used to make black people feel as though, and it was used, the term race card was actually skillfully used to nullify any acts of aggression or privilege that were gained by acts of white supremacy. So saying somebody, you know, because you could charge white supremacy, you could charge racism to a lot of things. I can't get a job, it's racism. I'm getting harassed by police, it's racism. I can't get a loan for this particular house. I can't get a small business loan to start this building. You can go down the list and see how they have policies in place, redlining in place. So basically what they're saying is we're going to remove the racial component by saying basically we're going to remove all the advantages that we got from white supremacy. This is them talking. And now when you can't say racism is the issue, now the issue is your own ineptitude. You just aren't good enough. You just don't qualify. And there used to be a newspaper in the Dartmouth Times. Dartmouth College used to have a newspaper where they used to talk about the fact that they don't want any remedial classes for black students in high school who were utilizing those classes so that they can get the skills and pick up on the skills that they were denied in high school. We know that black high schools didn't get those, you didn't get the proper education. So research that. It was sometime in like the 80s. It was in the 80s. Because there used to be a video out called Racism 101. And it was in this video, it was looping in this video. So there was a big ass protest in Dartmouth in the 80s over that. But the real race card, family, the real race card is the supplemental use of black tokens. I'm gonna say that again. The real race card is the supplemental use of black tokens who are given so-called privileged positions in society, whether it's in politics. So, you know, you're going to have a black mayor. You're going to have a black town or black city council. You're going to have a black police commissioner, a black fire commissioner. You're going to have all those different things. But yet and still, when the town crumbles, you can't point to white supremacy because you have black leadership. That's the black card. That's the race card that's being played. Because what happens is when people don't really understand politics, and this is what it kills me with our people who tell you to go out and vote, don't have a understand the politics. You can vote in your city and local politics all you want. The state legislatures control your budget. They control the infrastructure. They control who comes into your community, empowerment zones, all those different places. They control that. So when you are in the position, and keep in mind now, blacks were only really given control of the cities, the urban areas where black people lived. They weren't given control of the state in politics. So when you had a black mayor, you had a white governor, you had a white, you know, state of representatives, you know, you had white state senators. And I'm not talking about just elected senators, which we know blacks don't get elected for that shit anyway. But I'm talking about your state senators who are assigned to different regions around the state. You know, you have several of them in some of your cities, this, that, the other. They're the ones who control the budgets. They're the ones who vote on your school budgets. They're the ones who, you know what I'm saying, control all those other things, family. Those are the ones, they're the ones who control the money. They control, so they basically control the proposition of starving your city. The reason why Flint, Michigan is still suffering is because the state legislature out there, not the city of Flint, but the state legislature is holding up on the funding to replace the infrastructure of the pipes and the things of that nature in that city. That's why Flint's still suffering. You know what I'm saying? So, but you put a black face on it. And just like the situation that happened with Starbucks a few weeks ago, or last week, you know what I'm saying? With that situation that had with Starbucks, what did they do? They went and put a black woman from corporate who's supposedly the regional director, they flew her in to stand in front of those questions, to stand in front of those cameras and answer those questions. You know, she was the buffer. So the white supremacists, the owner, and the policies that they put, that they implement in those Starbucks all throughout the country and their different franchises, they didn't have to take the blow, not the immediate hit. She was the first on the scene. So when those brothers and sisters was down at that Starbucks protesting, which I still don't get me started on that, she was the one catching all the fucking bullets. So by the time he showed up on the scene, the president, by the time he showed up on the scene, everybody was out of ammunition. The fight was damn near over. You know what I'm saying? And then he got a chance to come out and smooth it all over. He got to play the good guy, bad guy. It's just like on The Wire. You know what I'm saying? We had the black lieutenant, I had the black police chief, and then you had the white lieutenant. And the white lieutenant would come out as the benevolent person, but the black police chief would be the one that's always, you know, the bad guy, the, you know, good cop, bad cop. He's always the bad cop, so that black people couldn't say that, oh, shit, this is racist. We have proxy racism in our community, and they put black people in approximation so that in case an emergency, break the glass, yank that Negro out and put him in front of a microphone. That's what we had. And here in Philadelphia, we had this weak-ass black commissioner. This weak-ass black commissioner. I'm trying to remember his damn name. Richard Ross. Richard Ross first came out and felt, you know, basically said the officers were right for coming in and arresting those brothers, which is bullshit. Okay, by the way, because the officers could have said, man, they could have got on that manager and said, stop calling us out here for bullshit, and just walked out. So that was wrong. But then he basically came back and, like, apologized two different times later. I mean, the man's made a complete fool of himself and basically showed that he's a spineless jellyfish and coming to, and he can't represent the police no more. He can't represent the black community. He can't represent nobody. He's a man on his own island, basically. And he's pretty much lost all the respect in his department, I'm pretty sure. So let's get to white supremacy, family. Let's get to, and I keep telling y'all, share this. Understand something, family. When you have a brother or sister that rises to an executive level in a white corporation, although you probably did more work than anybody there, your merit did not get you that job. I want to say this again. Your merit did not get you that job. What do we know about corporate America? Corporate America is not run by merit. It's not run by earning, like you earning your spot. Corporate America is run by nepotism. That's why all these families generationally have vice presidents and presidents that run their corporations. Because that's what runs corporations, the nepotism. They want to keep that money in the family. They want to keep the control and the power in the family. So when you get hired as in a position of authority, typically speaking, you have a large title, large salary that affords you a beautiful home away from us, because you know y'all like to get away from the niggas. So it affords you a beautiful home, affords you a nice two-car garage. You might even be able to afford two cars to go in it. Affords you a very nice lifestyle. You get to go on vacation. You get to drink the finest wines and all this other good shit. But you typically have no hiring or firing power in those particular positions. You are there so that when they have corporate gatherings and they go places, they can say, we have a diverse staff. Look at our staff. And they call you to the front. You always are one of the ones that have to speak at engagements, corporate getaways, conferences. You're always the one to speak. Why? It's because you are the race card being played by your corporation. The same thing happens in these local police departments. When you have black lieutenants, you know, the white shirt wearing cats that show up at the end when shit goes down. You are there in case some shit goes wrong. Because if something goes wrong, the white police commissioner or whoever's in charge of the city does not have to answer to it. They put your black ass out in front. You see Mayor Kenny here in Philadelphia kept his mouth shut about the whole situation. He wasn't loud, and if he spoke on anything, he was very quiet with hushed tones. Now let's take this situation out to the Waffle House, all right? And here's my issue with the Waffle House, family. And the golf course, by the way. One, I'm team black empowerment, no matter how this turns out. So don't put your fucking hands on our women, period. Don't put your hands on, I'm not ride with anybody touching black women, period. I don't give a fuck your cop. I don't give a fuck what you think, who you think you are. And brothers, if you're in the vicinity and some shit's going down, the sister's being accosted, and the best you can do is whip out your cell phone, just leave. Go somewhere way over there. Don't come back to the community. You're not, you shouldn't be welcome. So that's cowardly behavior. Nobody white would let you do shit to their women. They want their women to be dead wrong, high on all kinds of drugs and shit. You cannot touch them as a black man without being arrested yourself or possibly fucking killed. Do not act like pussies, because that's what it comes. We start acting like bitch made Negroes when they start showing up. That don't fly with me. Saying that, we have got to stop going into these places and stop being fucking committed, willfully ignorant targets. We are, war has been declared on our community. And for you Negroes to keep going out with your, playing games, like you don't see this shit happening all around you, like you live in some type of bubble, is beyond fucking me. At this point, you don't do shit that's going to invite them to put you in the crosshairs. It's not strategic, it's not smart. And I know we got this fly shit when we like to signify, say fly shit, like I don't give a fuck, I'm gonna go where I want. Huh. You know, that's typically the type of dumb shit I see all the time. And I'm like, cool, but when you get there, don't cry when you get caught up. You know what I mean? Now, and here's the deal. We should be able to go wherever we want. I'll fight for that any day of the week. I don't want nobody telling us where we can't go. But I'm going to tell you where I won't go. I will not be spending my fucking money in a place that doesn't want me there, that will call the fucking cops on me because I am not moving at an expedient pace to exit their facility once I paid the fee. Those sisters paid for that money to be on that golf course like everybody else. That they got their swipe. I know that check cleared. So they should have been able to lounge however long they wanted to. But here lies understanding racism, white supremacy. Stop learning after the fact. You know, it's an old saying. A smart person learns from their own mistakes. A wise person learns from the mistakes of other people. Everybody's attached to social media. Everybody sees what's going on. Why are you taking your black asses? And I'm talking to all black people. I ain't just talking to these sisters. Why are you taking all you black asses to these exclusive white places where you're the only specks of pepper in the whole fucking sea of salt? What is that about? Exclusiveness? See, that in itself, family, that's not the race card. That's an inferiority complex that you have. To feel as though you only feel good about yourself when you're surrounded by people who you feel is better than you or better than your community. And you feel as though that to be next to this, the proximity to this European, the closer the proximity to this European, the better I feel about myself. Hopefully they'll love and respect me. Hopefully they'll see me as a human being. Hopefully they'll see I'm one of them. You know, hopefully I'll be able to do all this. And they don't give a fuck about you. I was talking to this brother a couple days ago, and he was talking about how he wants to do something. We're going to talk. I'm going to put his name out there now because I need to school him a little bit. He's a younger brother. And then my role to him is a Jagner, just like I have Jagners that check me. You know what I'm saying? White people don't give a fuck about the truth. They don't give a fuck about the truth, y'all. They know the truth. And they lie to their fucking children every day. White folk know the truth and will lie to their children every October, November, telling them the Pilgrims and the Indians got together And the Indians thought the pilgrims were starving, so they taught them how to dry the corn. They taught them how to knead the corn. They taught them how to salt the food, and they had Thanksgiving because they came together as a culture. That's the biggest crock of shit lie ever told. They tell that shit now. They tell it now. They still tell the children that Christopher Columbus was trying to prove that the world wasn't flat. By the way, some of y'all motherfuckers probably still in that classroom from what I've been seeing, by the way, that flat earth shit. But, family, we have to stop being proxies for white supremacy. You know what I mean? Real talk. So the race card, let me get back to the race card, because the race card is used when these white folk inexplicitly, call the police over and over and over again to announce your presence. So you gotta go back to George Zimmerman, man. Go back to 2012. Originally, the reason why George Zimmerman was so pissed about Trayvon Martin, because George Zimmerman put in about 40 fucking phone calls complaining about wild black teens up and down that housing complex. He was making phone calls so much, the cops was like, yo, George, for real? He was out there, they knew him on a first name basis. And eventually, that wasn't enough. He didn't feel as though the cops were gonna come out and execute the young people, young brothers on command, so he did it and got away with it, became a millionaire with it, sold the gun and for $250,000. They don't give a fuck about y'all, about our truth, family. They don't care. The devil does not care about your truth. Take it home. Love it. I put a post up the other day, man. Said, shit, I hope Donald Trump gets reelected. So these white folk can keep showing y'all how they really feel about y'all. I just got off the phone with a sister in South Philly. She was coming home, bringing her son from the barbershop, and children were running up to her on the street. And they're like, yo, what's up? They were like, yo, these white kids who just moved around the corner came around here calling us all kinds of niggas. And these are little children. They're like, you know, 11, 12. They're young. And I'm like, yo, that's the Trump effect. We need to embrace that shit. Because I'd rather be around the people that would openly call me niggas, openly tell me they hate me, openly tell me that they plan to kill me, than for them to have those thoughts concealed and one day catch me slipping and end up murking me. Because when Obama was in office, that's what the fuck was happening. More black people got lynched under Obama's term than any time in any period in Jim Crow. That's why we got to be on code, family. That's why we got to be on code. We got to, I'm sorry, I read one of the comments, Franklin, Brother Franklin Hodges said, black people just want a hug and a check from their dad. Bro, I can't even be mad at you for that, bro. You know, we gotta stop looking at them like they hold the solutions. Let's come back to the race card for a second. Let's ask a serious question, family. I don't want everybody in the chat to come to chime in on this one. If you see a woman in an abusive relationship and you got love for her, and you know that this abusive relationship is only going to get worse the longer she's in it. You see her getting beaten. You see her being now malnourished. You see her being verbally abused, disrespected. You see, you know, bruises all over her body. She was once beautiful, now her face is black and blue. She's losing teeth. You know what I'm saying? You see that, you know, she doesn't keep herself up no more. You see that she, you know, calls her children little nasty bitches and little niggas and shit like that because of the abuses that she's been getting from that man. Wouldn't you feel like that I should step in and say something to that sister? And then how many times have we seen that sister and said that is a pathetic situation? How many times have we seen that and said that it is a pathetic situation? Often, y'all doing it right now. Y'all got girlfriends out there right now in a fucked up relationship that's abusive and crazy as shit. And y'all like, man, she needs to leave that dude. Or the other way around, like, yo, the brother, she needs to leave her. She's dragging him down. That's what it's like trying to tell black people that we need to divorce ourselves from white supremacy. You know, the old saying, I could do bad by myself. Well, we're doing real bad now. I'm not here to sugarcoat anything. We're in a very bad state. It's a very delicate, dangerous state. We're this close to a monumental collapse of what's left of our community. We're being gentrified and we don't even have a plan on where to go. The gentrification plan is damn near complete. If this was a book, they'd be on the last chapter in terms of gentrification and in the cities. So we do a lot of fighting and talking like we're gonna hold this block down. Go out there real quick and see if we can grab some people and buy these houses. It's too late. You're competing with organized, you know, companies. These dignitaries are coming in here with billion-dollar corporations. They got plans. They already mapped out your community. They know what your house is going to look like in 10 years because you ain't going to be in it. And we ain't even coming up with a plan to say, fuck it, let's at least build a life raft. At least build a life rope, a life boat or whatever. Buy one. You know what I'm saying? Just like in Texas right now. I bet you a lot of black people this past income tax season totally forgot about the fact that they were without means to survive during that hurricane that hit them last year. And instead of buying life rafts, generators, and boats, those motherfuckers went out and bought flat screen TVs. You know, more weed for the, you know, you know what I'm saying? All sorts of shit. You dig me? So we're still not thinking like a people who want to survive. You know, we're not thinking like, we're thinking like a people that's thinking that, you know, we're thinking like children. We're thinking like a group of people that's hopefully somebody's going to come save us. We still can play. Hopefully somebody will rescue us when shit gets too deep. And brothers and sisters, I'm here to tell you, you're dealing with an animal who has already killed off civilizations. There are people in the world, or people who used to be in the world, who are not here anymore. Research King Leopold. Research the rubber trees and how many they were cutting off, how many hands they were cutting off in the Congo. You know, that they 15 million people dead, 15 million Africans. Research who the first people who died during the Jewish Holocaust. They didn't go after the Jews first. They went after us. They killed us first. They knew who would be there. And who were the Jews? Who were the liberators? Who were the liberators? They had a general called Black Jack. And they had black, because he said, all I want is black soldiers, because those mean sons of bitches get the job done. They went over there and liberated all of fucking Europe and Germany and southern France. Go check out Tasmania and see if you can find any natives on Tasmania. It's an island off the coast of Australia where our Tasmanian brothers and sisters used to live. But unlike us, they said, fuck slavery. We'll fight to the last one. And they literally have a picture of the last surviving pure-blooded Tasmanian brother standing around a bunch of white captives, Portuguese captives, with their goddamn muskets out. You're dealing with an adversary that has shown you through theater, shown you with a movie called The Purge. They have a fucking franchise where they describe how they're going to kill you. War is on you, family. You got to stop playing. These aren't pellet guns. These aren't paint guns. These are real bullets that they're firing at us. Real bullets. And we playing games. See, I'm not out here telling everybody that you know, you can't live your life, but live your life understanding that the battlefield does not always look like the firing squad. That the battlefield, you know, typically is a calm and tranquil place. The battlefield, typically speaking, is one of the safest and calmest places in the whole theater. They call them theaters when they go to war. It's only when the gunfight happens that actual bullets start flying. But you go to some of these war-torn countries while they're at war. They got like fruit stands, fresh food. They be out there cleaning fucking chickens and shit. They be out there, you know, selling fish. They mingle with the occupying army and things of that nature. Sound familiar? Sound familiar, family? They do all those different things. And when it's time for war, when the war breaks out, when the rebels show up, shit, all those motherfuckers can be casualty of war. They don't give a damn about none of them getting killed in the street. Does that sound familiar, family? Sometimes the rebels have different factions that fight each other. Does that not sound like our communities? You know, our children here in America deal with more post-traumatic stress syndrome than children did during the bombing stages of war in Iraq. I want y'all to understand that. A study was done in around year 2000. Children in America are dealing with more wartime anxiety. And I talk to children all the time. Black children, when police officers roll up, they deal with post-traumatic slave syndrome all the time. They have anxiety kicks in. Child didn't do shit, but the cop rolls up and slows down. Instinctively, that genetic fear has been replaced, has been regenerated over and over and over again. And like a tuning fork, white folk know how to play with that shit. This is why they know when to catch us. I keep telling y'all, man, you're not dealing with an adversary that will go toe-to-toe with you. You're dealing with an adversary that says has a predator-prey relationship. We happen to be the prey right now. In fact, our behavior is prey-like. We're like a herd of sheep right now. And when the wolf comes in, if the herd of sheep really felt like it, they can overtake the fucking wolf. They can overtake them. But what happens in the herd of sheep right now is they try to get away. That one gets caught. And they're just glad it wasn't them. That's what we do. That's why we're still, Emmett Till's mother, Mamie Till, in a bone-chilling resolution at her son's funeral almost 70 years ago, when she said that when she was living in Chicago and in the North, that the problems of the people of the South, of Negroes of the South, was their business. She had a good house. She was a nurse. She had a good job. She had a nice living. She didn't need a one for anything. So when they were dealing with open white supremacy and open white aggression, when they were dealing with crosses burning on that lawn, that wasn't her problem. She sent her son down south. And when Emmett Till thought he could bring that northern attitude to the South, he was race corrected. They killed him for what they considered to be an assault to a white woman by fucking speaking to her. And she then said that now she knows that the problem of one of us better be the business of all of us. When are y'all going to get the goddamn message? Because that's the question. When are y'all going to get the message? It's all of our problem. Your money ain't going to allow you to escape that shit. You think those sisters didn't think they were balling on the golf course? They have a girls group that goes golfing all the time. You think that their money is going to rescue you? It's not. Dr. Dre, that man's a fucking billionaire. He was arrested trying to get into his own house last year. Every time Oprah Winfrey opens her mouth, a $40,000 a year news reporter checks the shit out of her. A $30,000 store clerk closes the door in her face and tells her she can't shop in here every time she opens her mouth. She can't do shit in the city of Chicago other than charity. Charity is not investment. They're two different things. Charity is when you want to make sure that somebody eats, that somebody has a comfortable pillow, that somebody might be able to have some soup, this, that, and the other. Investment is when you want to build them up, provide them with an opportunity to either become an institution or to join an institution. She can't do that shit in Chicago. That's why she went and built that school in Africa. Had problems out there. So, the race card. The race card, when some of you Negroes get this particular position and status, where specifically they targeted Black women. And I need you sisters to not get offended by what I'm about to say, but understand the game. They targeted Black women. And they sold Black women. Y'all didn't need anybody. You could be single and independent. Show me anywhere in America where white women say that shit. Nowhere in the history of the country have white women ever said fuck their men. Except for them lesbians. Otherwise, those white women, they ain't want to be, half of them feminists went home to their husbands. They created a class, a business class in society where they called it middle class, but it was in title only. It wasn't in money, because the Black middle class and the white middle class, functionally and financially wise, they're hundreds of thousands of dollars apart. All right, to give you an understanding, the top 10% in the white community, all right, grosses on like $3 to $4 million a family. I gotta check the numbers again, but it's somewhere around it. Black family, the top 10%, I mean the middle class, the Black family, average salary $60,000. All right, so it wasn't monetarily. The class system wasn't set up monetarily. It was set up with titles. You know, giving you a white collar jobs. So we're gonna put Black women in middle management. Now go to any hospital, any school district, any company, and look at the management positions, and then you go tell me, where do you see all the sisters who happen to be in there? What positions do they have? This ain't a slight against the sisters, but like I said earlier in the show, it's not that you haven't done the work to get the position. It's that it doesn't work like that. Nepotism is how positions are typically slotted. So when they put you in a position, it's because when some shit falls short, they need somebody to blame. I watched, when I was at CEP, I watched them do, they set Black principal up crazy. They knocked her whole fucking, they destroyed her whole budget. And she went there and showed her ass in Nashville, the corporate office in Nashville. When she got back home, they sent her an email telling her she was fired. And let me tell you something, man. She kind of earned that shit because she kind of believed the hype without understanding or talking to nobody that tried to explain to her. They setting you up. She was the fall part. She was the fall guy for when the numbers didn't add up, when the attendance was off, when the grades wasn't what they liked, when the enrollment dropped. They said, fuck it, we got to get you out of here. And that's what happened. She fat checked the fall on the sword. And some of the most stressed out people, unfortunately, are Black women, because they get you at those jobs. They work you twice as hard. They put you on salary so they don't have to pay you by the hour. And now you can't even get home to feed your fucking children a decent meal. Your children, because we all believed in the single women epidemic. And I'm not giving the brothers a pass on this, because brothers, it's time for us to stop being so weak that we allow other people to dictate our roles in our families. That's out. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing gained by submission. We gotta, because I'm gonna come to that in a minute too. You know what I'm saying? So brothers, don't think this is a high hell moment where I'm gonna jump on the sisters. Nah, fuckers, I got some words for y'all too. All right. So, but you got that situation. Now you got a single parent now, you know, specifically in the last couple of years, where you know the Wall Street killed all of those middle management jobs, and now people are underemployed. And let me explain to you what underemployed is, family, is when you work the same hours, but you make half of the dollars. So you don't get that $40,000, that $40 an hour job no more. Now you make maybe $25 an hour, but you got accustomed to a $40 an hour lifestyle. You got caught up in a car note that didn't stop going on. You didn't have to stop paying just because the stock market crashed. You got caught up in the housing market where they were foreclosing and shit because you wanted to get away from the rest of us niggas. Just like everybody else want their nice little house, and then their house starts stressing them out because they can't afford it. You know, the rugged individualism ain't just you sisters, it's some of you Negroes too. And let me get into that now. Because brothers, had we not submitted, had we not bought in to the whole idea of rugged individualism ourselves, materialism ourselves, had we not broken the cycle of plantation mentality, where we share the language and the behaviors of the plantation? Because when you call somebody a young buck, you're reinvigorating that spirit that had young black males in stables, and they were called bucks because as soon as a young black girl was old enough to have a period, they threw her in the stable with that young buck to rape her until she got pregnant because they wanted to maximize their yield. So the sooner she can get pregnant, the sooner then she can get pregnant again, pregnant again, pregnant again, because they stopped with the transatlantic slave trade in the early 1800s. But they kept the actual slave trade amongst the state because they started figuring out that it was cheaper and easier to get these Negroes over here who were already broken to reproduce, because the brothers and sisters they were trying to bring from the continent, they were still fighting them on the boats. They had to end that shit. They were losing too much stock. They were having fucking uprisings on those boats that nobody wants to talk about. It wasn't just Amistad. You know what I'm saying? They were jumping into the sea saying, fuck it, I'll take my chance with these sharks. You know what I'm saying? So we got to understand how that works. But brothers, you got to stop with the mindset of thinking that we can just point the fingers at the sisters like we ain't at fault for none of this shit. See, the race car also has a lot of you uppity Negroes, brothers, who had, you're in some of these positions of authority that you could actually do some real help, some real work with. If you're a police commissioner or a mayor, you can redirect some funds to some programs, some grassroots programs to get them off the ground, to get some of these young brothers and sisters off the streets, to stop that mentality. You can put more effort into creating infrastructure, empowerment zones where you're not selling out to these multi-billion dollar corporations in your neighborhoods and building and giving local grassroots businesses, mom and pop stores, a chance to come up. You can actually do those things, but you bitch made niggas are bigger bitches than any of the women you complain about. You bend over more and probably have looser bowels than anybody we're talking about tonight. Because y'all the main ones that sit up there, smile, look dignified, talk a lot of shit and don't do nothing. We had a president for 8 fucking years who did that. The only time he talked tough is when he was talking shit to black people. And I don't give a fuck about who gets offended by that. It's the truth. You can't look at nothing quantifiable. Look at the evidence. Don't tell me statistics. Show me what's happening. Show me the streets. Show me the blocks in the communities that are not improved. So when you have an entertainer, and yo, man, I need to get in touch with Kanye West. I need to get in touch with his publicist. Whoever his publicist is a fucking genius. Because how in the world does this dude stay relevant? I haven't listened to a Kanye West song in about 5 to 6 years. The last song I remember him on, it wasn't even his song. It was when him and Jay-Z were still making music together. Remember that bullshit line? If you ain't accustomed to customs, you ain't been nowhere. That Negro. How the fuck does this dude keep staying relevant? This dude, we got fuck boys like this who like to get in front of the mic, marry white women, and talk shit about the black community. Right now, they got a meme out right now on Kanye West talking about, what did they say? It's George W. Bush talking about Kanye West hates black people. This shit is hilarious. So, we'll go to the chat. We got, and I want to re-engage the chat real quick. Peace and Black Power, Brother Edward McGill. Queen Najib, Wakusu Queen, Peace and Black Power. You said based on that stat earlier, Antonio Moore has stats on that. I'd like to, if you can, you know what, I'm going to look that brother up. Because we need to put some stats to this, because unfortunately, that's all people seem to believe. You know what I'm saying? Brother Stephen Holmes said we need a backing. I think you might see a banking system or backing system to protect people when we speak up and not lose out. Brother, I am so glad you said that. We do need a backing system. And we need that system to be us. We need to stop being afraid. Because a lot of people talk about Dr. King and they didn't like his peaceful civil non-disobedience. But go check out Dr. King early and then after he received his new funding. And then you'll get to know, you'll know all you need to know about why Dr. King changed his tune. All right? Dr. King changed his tune after he got that bridge. And he kept changing the tune, you know, because black civil rights leaders at the time, they were being bought off by the Kennedy administration. The Kennedy administration was showing over checks. And they created a fund. And see, this is what happens all the time, man. When we have pushes and movements, they start getting behind them and funding them. That's why as soon as George Soros backed Black Lives Matter, everybody black should have just backed out of that shit. You know what I mean? Everybody should have backed out of that shit. Would you say Dash Kanye is still relevant because it feeds our appetites for bullshit on social media? Absolutely. Absolutely. Kanye, but I listen, for whatever reason, man, you're right. No, Kanye, but he still finds a way to be extremely relevant. God knows how. We have to start being, you know, getting out of this game, the thing we do. We play games with real life shit. And then when real life stuff happens, we start crying foul. Like I've been seeing brothers, you know, a lot of people have been getting, the weather just got nice here in Philly like 2 days ago, and people have been dropping like flies. People have been getting killed all throughout the city, dropping like flies. And I'm seeing brothers just throw their hands in the air like, when will it end? And I'm like, when you get serious. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to my brother, BF and Kuhlman. He had a meeting tonight out West Philly. You know, I couldn't make it. But that doesn't stop anybody else from making these meetings where we're trying to build back up the black captains, the block by block black captains. If you're serious about building and you're serious about wanting this shit to stop, where you're seeing your children, your friends, and children of your friends getting shot and killed in the street, then you need to join us when we hit the streets. You know, you need to start, instead of popping bottles and showing up video games and happy as fuck that Meek got out, ask Meek if he can help y'all with some you know, short business loans. Ask him if he could take some of that bread that, you know, was left over from whatever he had to pay them lawyers to get out. Ask him if he could help y'all start some programs in the hood where you're not just being charity, but you're building an institution, because you never know who he might touch. You never know who we might touch. You might touch the one who was going to kill you 2 days from now. You never know. I bump into young brothers and sisters, specifically young brothers, all the time. And I have to snatch them by the back of their shirt like, yo, bro, don't worry, man. It's going to get better. How? Well, we're going to work on that. But I just want you to know that what you're out here doing is not going unnoticed. I see you at the supermarket. I see you trying to be polite. I see you trying to hustle to get a job. I see they won't hire you inside, so you're outside trying to walk people to their cars. And I see how disrespectful they are to you. Just know I got love for you. In fact, here's $20. Why? You were out here all day. You probably earned more than that. But here's $20. You know what I'm saying? And that's not that I can't use $20, but that $20 might change. That might save your fucking life. Because that might have us a shame. That brother, you know, every time I saw him after that, and I didn't even have to see him, he would run up to me. Brother, I just wanted to say hi. How you doing? You good over here? You good? It's not for that purpose, family. I mean, and bragging about, I'm not bragging about shit. But what I'm trying to tell you is, when you invest in these children, these young brothers especially, you change their outlook. So that next night something happens, something might happen. You don't know what they're going through, what they're dealing with. They're 13 years old outside. 13 years old outside at like fucking 9, 10 o'clock at night, trying to hustle to get food to eat. You don't know what their home life is like. But if you pour into them and you let them know that there's somebody who's not going to shit on them that looks like them, you might save the next person that comes up and disrespect them. Because we are all one step away from killing some fucking body. I myself sometimes have to walk away from silly Negro bullshit. And I'm dealing with all the white supremacy, and I'm protecting, and the Negroes I'm trying to protect are the main ones telling me to kiss their ass. Man, you might get fucked up if you say two more things. Let me leave. That's the mindset you have to understand. We're dealing with these children, but they don't have the skills to cope with those things. They don't have the skills and ability to learn that. So their reaction is primitive because it's survival technique. And yes, that one that when you said, when he walked up to you and said, yo, can I help you with your bags of car? Fuck out of here, show them good. That one might be the one to kill your son. That one might be the one that kills your daughter. That one might be the one waiting for your mother to go into the house at night and run up in there and do a home invasion. You just never know. So you need to get out there. When we start talking about we're having these pushes and we need brothers to come out, brothers, y'all need to be more visible on the pavement. Y'all need to be on the street, not just talking shit. Because when you do all this, you start looking like bitches to me. And I'm sorry, I wish I had a better way to say it. But that's bitch-made behavior. Whining and crying, oh, Lord, help us. Why won't they? Fuck out of here. You got the power to change any situation you want to if you put your mind to it. And then if you put your will to it, you got the ability to change all that. Don't let them, by using the race card, nullify your potential to be a game changer in your own community. It's that simple. I started my garden back up. I didn't need nobody's permission from that. I started my garden back up. My greenhouse got fucked up. So what? I still got the garden. I'm working on it. You know, we have to get to the point, family, where you start taking some initiative. And that brings us to the last point we're going to talk about tonight, y'all. Reciprocation. Reciprocation, family. Let me just say this boldly and bluntly. If you see somebody during a marathon and you have the ability to help them, especially when you see that they're in a stress situation, a stress condition, you have a bottle of water in your hand, you can just pass it on to them, and you choose not to. When that person finishes that race, don't come to that person later saying, damn, you got a lot of accolades, and I see you have all these awards and this, that, and the other. Can you help me? Like, motherfucker, where was you at when I needed help? And see, there's a lot of us that are dealing with that because there's part of me that says, you know what? I understand we have a sick people. Black people are sick. It's just that. That's just how it is. We are sick people. We are a sick community. And we see ourselves through the lens of white supremacy, and we don't see each other. We don't see value in each other. We see what we can get off that person because we see through the lens of white supremacy. So we see each other through that same white supremacist lens. And when we see that, we see us the way they see us. We see us as mules and resources to be used up and discarded when not used, when no longer in use. And we have to change that mentality. I'm trying hard because I'm typically not a petty person, but I got some inboxes this week. Like, what the fuck? Now, from some people, I bang with them. Sister Shanice Starr, I rock with you. I'm do whatever I can to help you, Queen, because you have been one of those people that have been just stellar whenever I needed anything. I want to make that clear. Some of you other motherfuckers, I ain't heard from y'all in years. I ain't heard from you. Where were y'all when I was doing my crowdfund? You know what I mean? Y'all still ain't even grabbed the copy of the greatest DVD ever made. You know, but real talk, being for the community doesn't make you a sucker. And I'm not going to be a sucker, and you shouldn't be a sucker. And this is advice I've been giving young people all week. You cannot allow people who see you as a resource to use you up, because they're just users. And as soon as you get used up, guess what? They're going to go find somebody else to use up. So don't feel bad with saying no. Don't feel bad with sliding off. Don't feel bad with that shit. because you have a greater purpose. I cannot get used up by people who don't give a fuck about the community. If your push is not for the building and the betterment of our community, I can't get used up by you. I'm sorry. My energy is not infinite. My resources is not unending. You know, my time is limited. I have to be efficient as possible with what I have for the people and the members of the community that have been riding or that need it the most. It's funny how we've been talking about all these people that have been getting busted, getting their ass twisted. You see the young brothers that was in the Starbucks? How they came out talking about the shit wasn't about race? I'm done with that. I was done. First of all, I was done after the incident started. Because I wasn't going back to Starbucks, because it's still a thing of them disrespecting black people. Even though those two young coon-ass Negroes did not see it that way, because they must have got offered a settlement or something. You know, hold me in a goddamn prison cell for 12 hours and see how fucking nice I am when I come out. All right? It's going to be about racing a whole lot more. Shit, you know, Jones Bucks, you know, the name of that fucking store. But in addition to that, family, I don't know what those sisters are going to say about that golf course situation. But how were they riding before that? And I keep saying this over and over till I drive it home. How were you riding before the incident occurs? Can we go? And because everybody's on social media, we should see a track record of you at least sharing some shit. My man Dad said, all lives matter. Oh, Samaj, you're back. Good looking, brother. You know what I'm saying? How is the sister that got beat up by the cop and stripped? And I'm gonna tell you, black women, y'all better stop fucking around going places unattended. See, well, I threw my goddamn movie somewhere. I threw it somewhere. Anyway, there you go. The Independence Day Project. We talk about that. We talk about the way that you should behave in an empowerment when you're aware of our condition. We talk about that in this movie. This is why I don't take a lot of people seriously, because you act like $20 is going to kill you. Some things are invaluable. That's why when you go to Amazon, there are some books on there for like $700. There are some books on there for like $1,200. And you be like, ooh, it's too expensive. It's purposely priced that way because there's information in that book that you're not supposed to see. So when I tell you that I have liberating information for you, and I tell you it's only $20, and you turn to me and say, I ain't doing that. What you're telling me is that you're black ass, you don't think you're worth it. You don't think you're worth $20. But if you came and sat at a bar, and now I'm talking to the sisters now, not the brothers, came and sat at a bar, you would hope that I would spend $20 worth of drinks on you because you're supposed to be worth it. So I can get you drunk, but I can't get you high. That's the problem. And you brothers, some of you brothers out there that I know who can't buy your clothes off a vendor on the street because you need official shit because you know your value. You need to spend $200 on a pair of fucking pants. You need to spend $300 on a goddamn belt. You need to spend $500 on a pair of Gucci shoes. This, that, and the other. But you can't spend $20 on your own fucking salvation? To sit still for 2 hours and watch information pour in from people just like you all over the country? This is not celebrity driven. This is you driven. This is driven for the black community. But you know what? You don't think you're worth it. You don't think the reciprocity belongs to you. You don't think that you're worth it. So it's not me. I know people. I keep telling y'all, I'm not just people, elders, this, that, and the other. Since y'all want to be celebrity driven, I've been hearing that people that made, you know, certain types of movies like She Hate Me and this, that, and the other have been asking about the Independence Day Project. I've been corresponding with Judge Joe Brown for the last 3 weeks, going back and forth about, you know, some of the high points of the Independence Day project. But it's cool, you know, because I'm the hustler. Yo, that's what you call me, the hustler. Not me personally, possibly me personally. I'm a hustler. But the motherfucker that convinced you to spend $500 to put their name on your ass ain't a hustler, huh? The motherfucker that convinced you to buy hair that to put in yours and charge you like $300 a bundle ain't a hustler, huh? You know what I mean? That's cool though, because we like looking the part. We too scared to be the part, because that might scare white daddy and white mommy. And we don't want that. We love proximity to whiteness. That might be the biggest race card of all, is the fact that we think that they are so much better than us that just being in their presence has us breathing rarefied air. And we don't want shit that would put a wedge in between us and them potentially growing some morality and loving us one day. There's the beautiful black people we are, the yes sirs, the nisas, and the multisho tribe members and descendants that we are. I can't help y'all. I can't help y'all. Y'all already made your choice. I focus on the babies. Because when I tell the babies it's time to ride, they like, where? Let's go. They don't need to deal with the cognitive dissonance of trying to be up under white mommy and white daddy all their life. They see these white motherfuckers in their schools and they can't stand them. They can't stand the teacher. They can't stand the principal. They can't stand the fucking cops that ride up and down their block. They can't even stand the motherfuckers that own the corner stores that they live on the blocks that they live on. You should see how they talk to these motherfucking invaders. They don't know no better. What I mean by know no better, they still spend their money in there. But it's hostility, because they understand that these motherfuckers don't belong around us. Nah, man. Oh, brother Greg the Grillman, peace and black power to you, brother. Just go to the link up at the top of the caption, blackindependence.org. We have a PayPal situation set up. If you don't want PayPal, I got a Cash App, brother. Hit a brother up on the inbox and we can work that all out, good brother. Peace and black power to you. I want to also speak to the family over in YouTube universe watching this. KC, peace and black power, brother. Neptune, peace and black power. Wakusu to the family. You know what I'm saying? We have to start realizing that our liberation is worth buying. Our liberation is worth spending. I saw a post anywhere earlier today that said, you show me where you spend your dollar, where you put your dollars, where you put your power. You know what I'm saying? Where you put your dollar is where you put your power. Thank you, Sister Robin. Peace and back power to you, sister. Y'all need to check out Robin's show too. Robin, Sister Robin has a show on Sundays from like 12 noon. Sister Robin, post your link for your show. This banging show she does with my brother Akil Parker. You know, I'm coming back. I had a good time on that show. We dropped some real good heat on that show. Make sure, family, that you support the cause. Like I tell y'all, man, all the time, we're doing something with the National Black Liberation Front that's not been done in our community in a long time. I'm not going to say it's never been done. We're not doing anything new. We just have a new way to go about doing it. And the things that we're putting in place right now, you're going to see it. Because that's when people tell me about Obama, President Obama, and the things that he did for black people, I said, if he created a better condition for black people, you would see it. When people create better conditions for your community, you will see it. White folk are creating better conditions for their community. That's why your community is turning into their community. That's why your bad neighborhoods are being refurbished and they're an up-and-coming, trendy destination for white folk all over the world. Don't you know that white people are paying each other to move into your neighborhoods? Y'all didn't know that, did y'all? They have little seminars where they're paying down payment money for people to buy houses in your neighborhood. All those dilapidated buildings, all those new construction projects they got going on, they are paying their cousins, their aunts, their friends, their drinking buddies to come live with you. They have bar table discussions all the time, passing trade secrets about what they're going to do in this neighborhood, how they got one part of the block, the other part they got bookends, and how they working it toward the middle. They have these conversations all the time. Are we parlaying? We're happy as shit. We're just out here doing nothing. I'm just minding my business. I'm staying in my lane. I'm staying out of the way. Nah, they putting y'all out of the way. They serious. And see, that's how I know black people understand power. Because when it comes to power, you know what I'm saying? When it comes to power, when real power show up, even your thugs get out the way. Those houses that are occupied and used to be squatted on by thugs, and those motherfuckers show up and say, y'all got to leave. We're putting a bolt in the door. Y'all got to get the fuck out. Ain't no arguing. It ain't no guns blazing. It ain't no hold on who you talking to. It's like, yo, man, we got to go. Daddy just showed up and said, we got to roll, son. So even your neighborhoods, hoods, know when real power steps up. So we got to come up with a plan, family. We got to change and reorganize this whole race card situation, because they've been using the race card to stifle us by putting a black face in front of all our problems. So when the problem shows itself, the black face takes the blame. Mayor Wilson Good still has taken the blame for the firebombing that happened in MOVE in 1985. He had nothing to do with that shit. He was watching the shit on TV like we was. He didn't even have access to the phone to call nobody to say drop a bomb. First of all, a mayor doesn't make that decision, but he took the heat for that shit. That was the race card being played. To this day, people are still going around. This man is a traveling preacher now. He has a laptop with a Bible on it. To this day, he still takes the blame for that MOVE situation. You know what I'm saying? Family, we got to get on code. We got to get our shit together. We got to stop playing games. We got to stop playing like this Caucasian is playing with us, because it's not. Caucasian's not playing with us. They don't love you. They fucking hate you. And the ones that you love don't love you enough to protect you for the ones who will do harm for you. This is why they can play the race card, shoot up a whole Waffle House, because I didn't even talk about that incident, shoot up a whole Waffle House, and then get a $2 million bond for which the father can afford. Do y'all even realize that was an organized hit? That was an organized organized act of terrorism? Did y'all even realize that? Before I get off the air, I just need to say that for those of you who are still here. And thank you all for tuning in, by the way. Let me just break that down real quick. So this dude goes and he gets guns. Now, supposedly, he was obsessed with Taylor Swift. So he took his guns. The cops said, fuck, give me guns. Gave the gun to his father. Now, black people, let me just ask you one question. Name one time cops took guns from a person in your family and then gave them back to you or anybody else. All right? This is how cells work, though. All right? He was just triggered too fast. They always get the ones that are a little slow, by the way, to do this shit. So this dude's father gives him the guns back. Now, this dude who's supposedly mentally deranged or whatever finds his way to a local car dealership. Now, I'm not sure if you've ever been in a car dealership for a family. But car dealerships, cars are normally parked so close together that you typically have to slide them through the window to get into these motherfuckers. Two, car dealerships typically have a bunch of keys laid around, and they don't necessarily have the keys matched up to the cars that's outside. Somehow, some way, he steals this car. Somehow, some way, the car is never reported stolen. Because when he shows up at the first Waffle House, still like 2 o'clock in the morning, too many Negroes was there. He drove down the road to the other Waffle House and shot that Waffle House up. Killed four people. Two of them happened to be cops, I believe. And then, if it wasn't for the bravery of a brother who said, fuck, y'all can call me a hero all I want. He wasn't just going to kill me. I was going to make it work for it. Brother, you're a hero in my eyes. I know a lot of Negroes that would have froze and let that shit go down. Thank you for having some initiative for self-preservation. The rest of the community can learn from that. Because we just letting them fucking kill us all over the place. Thankfully, that brother wrestled that motherfucking AR-15 from him. Again, the signature gun of terrorism. This is all, you know, this is all planned, y'all. Keep in mind, this dude runs away wearing a goddamn overcoat and nothing else. This dude's run back and rightly running around streaking naked. And you can't find his ass. You can't find his pale ass in the bushes. You can't find it. It took him like 2 days to find this motherfucker. And they didn't kill him. They took him alive. $2 million bond. Job well done. He's the fall guy for the cells. At the same fucking time, you had a guy up in Toronto mow down 10 people in the street. And he pointing a gun outside the car at a police officer talking about, I dare you to kill me. Kill me. And the cop was lauded for having enough restraint not to shoot his ass. Don't get it twisted, the Canadian border. That's just North United States, the 52nd state. You know, the 51st state, they taking the shit on Puerto Rico right now. You know, for all my Latino brothers and sisters who I'm not black, I'm Spanish. Nah, your ass is black with an accent. And it's showing you how black your ass is right now. Y'all better get on code too. This situation is taking place. All this shit is terrorist stuff. You gotta understand, Hitler's birthday in April, this shit is like a holy day for white supremacists all over the world. So in the month of April, you normally see a spike in anger and aggression and aggressive and terroristic acts towards black people. I'm not a people of color. I'm not a minority. I don't know what none of that shit means. It don't mean black. It's weak. It's submissive. Basically, you might as well say, I want to say the most unoffensive term possible to distinguish myself is, I'm not white, but I don't want to get too close to that black shit. You know, you can miss me with that bullshit too. They do this shit every year. And that's why I did a live really talking about we're April Fools. How are y'all not on guard? How do y'all just think y'all live in this bubble where they're not going to attack you? I tell people all the time, my head is on a swivel. I know I'm a fucking target. And I'm normally in places where black people are, but once in a while, I might have to be in a place where I'm surrounded by motherfuckers that don't look like me. My head is on a swivel because that shit can go down anytime. I could be somewhere in a fucking convenience store and they can call the cops on me like they did John Crawford. And the motherfuckers will shoot first and ask questions later. I could be walking in the park, minding my own business, and they'll drive by and shoot me. They did it to a 12-year-old boy. Tamir Rice, why won't they do that to me? Got to be alert. Sisters, stop arguing with these fucking cops. They already showed you with Sandra Bland. We had my sister Miranda Allen on this show talking about how they tried to set her up to kill her. They tried to make her look crazy. They wouldn't take her name. They practically stripped her naked. Come on, family. They called her Jane Doe. They was going to fucking kill her. And that same weekend, they actually did. They arrested a brother in Florida, locked him up, and his mother went to go bail him out. The next day, she showed up at the jail, and they said he was dead. Same situations. Family, stop giving them bullets. They have enough ammunition. Come back home so we can plan about building this empowered black community. It's not going to be a quick fix, but once we build it, I guarantee you, they'll think twice about coming to us, fucking with us. I guarantee that. I guarantee you, with the consequences and repercussions we put in place, they won't be thinking twice. They'll be thinking twice before they cross the fucking gun line. I bet you that. But you got to be ready to build it. And right now, they know we don't even care enough to build it because we're still fighting to get into their spaces. We still want exclusivity. We want to be exclusive away from. We want to be those exclusive niggas that can hang with white folks. Long as we keep showing those behaviors, family, they know that they can still keep picking you off, killing your children, and pillaging you off. And see, what the biggest issue right now, family, is because black men, the whole response to us, this is the most damning thing that can happen. When they start attacking your women and they start attacking your children, it's because they have already neutralized the men. Study European world and society. Study the prehistoric wars in Europe. Europe has been at war with itself, and since ever since recorded history has begun. So ever since they have recorded history, their history, they have been at war with each other. What do you think Scoundrel and Vandal and Vistakos, all those were names of tribes that were at war with each other? They all have horrible, you know, horrible connotations because they were blood, they had a bloodlust, they were killing anything, and they were eating each other. Now they're cannibalizing off their own, fighting their own. They didn't just lose their shit because they came in contact with us. We need to be glad that our ancestors were able to hold them off as long as they did. But they've always been at war. And in the rule of their war, the victor go the spoils. They weren't talking about gold. They weren't talking about silver spoons. They were talking about the ability to rape women and children. I just put a video up earlier about, it's from the Independence Day Project, ironically. And it's Brother Shamari, Erkeith Rhymes, one of my Jegnas, speaks to the difference between a Jegna and a mentor. Go check that video out if you want to understand Greek and Roman society and what they saw and how they and related to one another and how the relationship between a mentor and a mentee was really a bunch of pedophile bullshit. Got to learn that, family. Got to learn it. But it's getting late, family. I got to get ready to go. We've been on here for a minute. I appreciate everybody checking in. If you're trying to get through, family, just come go through the hit me up on Facebook and get me Professor Carl Jones. Go to my inbox right on this page. If you're trying to reach me, Google Drive, Gmail, or you can hit me up, message on the YouTube link. You know what I'm saying? See, we have some notifications. Make a comment in the box, family. You know, one of the things I want us to get to, family, is understanding that we can do whatever we want to, family, whenever we're ready. We have the power to do it, family. Black people, why do you think they work so hard to keep us down? Because they know if every chance that black people were left alone in this hemisphere, in this country, in the world, black people thrive. Black people did shit. Even mimicking them, we did better than them. That's why they called it Black Wall Street. Like, shit, this is a small-ass neighborhood, but damn, this is better than the street we used to sell your ancestors on. Yeah, we did that. So with that said, family, I'm signing out. Make sure y'all check in. Make sure y'all go check out the brothers and sisters I mentioned earlier. You know, make sure you hit everybody up, and because we ride together, and we're going to win, family. That's the one thing I say. We're all going to win. You know, we're going to take it home.
You will not be able to stay
peace,
home.
Black Power. By the way, this is my brother, Eddie Somerset. Make sure y'all check his catalog out, all right? Make sure y'all check his catalog out. My brother, Eddie Somerset, this right here is The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. Peace and Black Power, family. One love.
You will not be able to hate the good lie from those that really want you to be great in this world. Cause the revolution will not be televised. You will not be able to fake the funk on a nasty dunk to be placed amongst the cranks you won't. The revolution will not be razor bumps from job interviews 5 days this week just so you can stay on your feet and make ends meet. The revolution will play for keeps. The revolution will not end in